I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Democratic socialist Bernie Sanders gave Hillary Rodham Clinton some real competition in the Democratic primary for president in 2016. Democratic socialist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stunned the Democratic Party last month when she beat longtime incumbent Joseph Crowley in the primary race for New York's 14th congressional district. Closer to home, four candidates for the Pennsylvania House who were endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America all won their primary races this spring. It should be said, though, they were not all Democratic Socialist candidates. Nonetheless, is this brand of socialism having its moment, coming into its own, making inroads into the Democratic Party? What do these victories say about the state of electoral politics, the voters' mood and mind, and the Democrats themselves? And what, by the way, is Democratic Socialism? We have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Teresa Lundy is principal of TML Communications, a public relations and strategic communications firm here in Philadelphia. She's worked on a number of campaigns, including for Shaka Fatah, City Council President Daryl Clark, the mayoral campaign of Doug Oliver, and the Justice for Meek Mill campaign. Teresa Lundy, nice to have you with us on Radio
Times. Glad to be here, Marty.
Nice to have you with us. Nina Ahmad, former deputy mayor for public engagement to Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney. She ran for lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania in 2018. She came in second. She got almost 200,000 votes. Nina Ahmad, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you all with us. And Natalie Madiri is a former co-chair of the Philadelphia chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. She's now a leader on the DSA's National Political Committee. And Natalie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
And I have to say, sometimes the shows begin at 10:06:30 when I begin my introduction, and sometimes they begin about 10 minutes before. So we have been already having a really interesting conversation. We want you to join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Natalie, I do want to begin with you because I think there's a lot of confusion about what does it mean to be not just a socialist, but a democratic socialist. What does that mean? What should we know?
Sure. So we're socialists because we believe that the working class in this country is what made this country great, right? We are the people, and notably, you know, we believe that it's not entrepreneurs and business people and technocrats that have made this country great, right? It is working class people who have created the bounty in our society. And we're the people, because of our position at the site of production, who have the power to transform society. We're democratic because we believe that that bounty we create should be shared equitably amongst everybody to meet human need and ensure that everybody has a baseline of dignity and comfort, instead of all of that wealth and all of that power going just to a small minority of people, of capitalists at the top of our economy.
So I'd translate that into education, healthcare, the environment, consumers, banking, pay equity, minimum wage,
yes,
voting,
yes.
Our electoral system. What does that mean?
Yeah, so it means, you know, we're building working class power, and we are building it, so that we can do politics in a little bit of a different way. You know, we believe that obviously it's very important to get people elected on the inside of our government. But more importantly, I think right now we believe those people, the role that they're playing is they're sort of exposing a lot of the contradictions in our political system. Right, they're exposing the tensions between capital's influence, special interest groups' influence on, you know, the Democratic Party specifically, but also politics at large. And they're syncing up with social movements on the outside, mass action on the outside, strikes like we saw this year from the West Virginia teachers, mass boycotts and things like that. And that's the way political change happens. You know, it's not just about getting out to vote, you know, getting more Democrats elected to the state legislature, you know, whatever, what have you, that it needs to be synced up with a real working class action on the outside of the political system.
Let me just do one more follow up, and then I'll get our other two guests in the conversation. Things like health care, Medicare for all, free health care,
yes,
free college,
yes.
standard minimum wage, I mean, minimum wage, $15 an hour?
Yes.
Okay, those, I mean, if we were to think about democratic socialists, those would be some of the ideas that we would think of?
Absolutely, and it's for two reasons, right? So right now in DSA, Medicare for All is our key national campaign that we're waging in 50 states. And we're doing it, one, because it frames the nature of the political moment that we're in, we believe, right, that this is about the majority of us in the working class against a small minority of capitalists in the insurance industry, employers who like that we have a health insurance system right now that ties people to, you know, jobs that they don't love, right? It's about framing that political narrative. And then it's also about winning transformative working class victories that would mean, you know, that working class people, if we won Medicare for All, would have a better position to fight and wage class struggle from, right? If they didn't have to worry about, you know, losing their employer health care coverage every time, you know, they organize in their workplace, right? That's a much better place from which the working class can organize.
Teresa, let me go to you. And Natalie, I'll get you, Nina, I'll get you in on the conversation as well. How does that square what we heard Natalie say? How does that square with the Democratic Party's principles?
So I have
or does it?
Right. So I have a little bit of a different feeling of why we even have to talk about free health care and free education, because there's consequences behind everything that we ask for that should be free will, right, according to the definition of socialists. So I think my position, especially where we are in Democrats, if we even talk about Philadelphia's landscape, we see a tide of where we're still trying to figure out what those solutions look like and still try to figure out where the money is coming from. The city is doing audits left and right. We have a new city controller in who is doing her job, but also initially, according to some statements, was a part of the problem initially. So I think, you know, as we talk about what makes sense in terms of what the Democrats are looking to do, especially for 2020, I don't know if it's necessarily let's, you know, figure out what's free and what's accessible and what does the definition of working class actually look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, you know, working class is it could be lower income, hopefully, right? But also we are starting to see that gentrification that is happening. So I think we need to address that as well, also, especially with the small businesses that is happening here in the city.
I'm going to pick up on that, but let me get you in on the conversation. Nina, you ran for lieutenant governor. It was kind of a late addition, I guess, because of Supreme Court decision in Pennsylvania having to do with gerrymandering. Nonetheless, so you've been a bit in the trenches.
That's right.
How would you describe the mood of voters? What do they want, especially from Democrats?
So I think fundamentally people want economic security that gives them the freedom to make their decisions. I was running on a platform to say that what do we as a government do in order to have people feel that and they can drive their own destiny. I don't think we need a system where we tell people what to do. I think we create a system where people have the freedom to decide what to do. And that's the mood I found. I mm-hmm. found having an authentic voice, not being beholden, which I wasn't to anyone. There was no one big supporting me or no party supporting me. And that was very attractive to people across the state of Pennsylvania. I was very proud of Pennsylvania. I got 184,429 votes, came in second in 11 weeks, whereas my other competitors had been running for years, right? And for Pennsylvania to be able to, and I won in 16 counties, which tells me that Pennsylvania is ready for embracing someone who can bring it's not so much the person, it's the message. Like, what are we trying to do? And so I was excited, and I'm continuing to be excited how we sort of extrapolate that.
You ran as a Democrat. Mm-hmm. What do you make, if anything, of a number of the Democratic Socialists who seem to be making some inroads? Certainly Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, mm-hmm. the prime example. There were a couple of candidates here in Pennsylvania as well. What do you make of that?
I love it.
You love it. I mean,
I love it because, think about it, it's all the Democratic Socialists who won are women.
I noticed that. Yes. I was going to ask about that.
I do know. I've met Summer Lee, who's from North Braddock, and extremely impressed with her. She's a young black woman, a lawyer who is really understands what's on the ground and what needs to change. Had a really good time meeting her. And so I know Elizabeth Fiedler here, and how she ran that campaign, in spite of having money put into other candidates, she mm-hmm. reached the voters. She had an army of folks going out and spanning the district. Obviously, I had the whole state, and these are smaller districts, but that's how you do it. You do it by reaching voters. And how do you reach voters? Not just reach voters, but say what it is that they're saying, listening to people.
Well, and I should say to our listeners that Elizabeth Fiedler was a producer on Radio Times before she quit to run for mm-hmm. office. Mm-hmm. She did not, though, run as a Democratic Socialist.
Correct.
She got endorsed, mm-hmm. but she did do a lot of really door-to-door, as I think a lot of these other campaigners mm-hmm. have done as well. How important, Teresa, is that kind of grassroots knocking on doors?
Yeah.
Getting people's attention, talking to them.
Yeah, it's 100% the full effect of how a campaign should be ran. We have to start going back to traditional times where knocking on doors, kissing babies, going to the next community meeting or the church visit. And a lot of times I think people are just putting too much money into media ad buys. I think they're putting too much money in different organizations and basically paying one person to really quantify an entire voice versus actually taking one community and actually re-engaging their resources and taking back the understanding and listening to their needs and then applying what policies actually makes sense.
But Natalie, it's interesting that these number of candidates who either are Democratic Socialists or endorsed are running as Democrats. And I have a yes. question about whether they are, in a sense, using the Democratic Party to get elected. If they ran as Democratic Socialists of America candidates, would they do so well?
No, Marty, I don't think they would. And in particular, the reason why DSA, and I think almost all of our incredibly successful races in the last year have been on the Democratic Party ballot line, it's not so much because I think that the Democratic Party is what defines our candidates, so much as our American political system right now has been by design created to be very hostile to third party politics. And we're very mindful. I think there have been some really incredibly important experiments in creating third parties that have failed, because of the discipline, and the structural rules. So what we're trying to do essentially is build brand ID around our values and our commitments, right? So when I think people hear a DSA candidate, they associate that with a person who is for Medicare for all, they're for rent control, they're for fully funded public higher education, and they've made a commitment to not take corporate PAC money, special interest money, right? And that's where their power comes from, that's a much bigger commitment, right, than the name on the ballot line next to their candidacy.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's Natalie Madiri, and she is a leader on the Democratic Socialist of America's National Political Committee. Also with us, Nina Ahmad, former deputy mayor for public engagement for Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney, and she ran for lieutenant governor just a couple of months ago here in Pennsylvania. Also with us, Teresa Lundy, and she's a principal of TML Communications, does PR and education advocacy, working with a number of Democratic candidates and elected officials here in Philadelphia. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Motz-Cohen, and we're talking about the influence of socialist policies or democratic socialist policies on the left, on the Democratic Party, if these candidates can make good on their campaign promises if elected. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Nina, let me put the same question I put to Natalie about these democratic socialists running in the Democratic Party. As someone who ran as a Democrat in the Democratic Party, how do you feel about that?
I think we are a party that is inclusive and or should be if it's not. And I don't see a huge, for me, myself personally, I don't see a huge difference in the platform issues that I ran on with what the Democratic Socialists talk about. I believe in healthcare for all, and I believe in access to public education, higher education, and public education as a whole needs to be improved, have a vocational track to that with equal value, to talk about access to all kinds of resources that are... The one thing that I think I wanted to underscore is the economic security has to be connected to racial diversity as well. Mm-hmm. That is the one piece I think... I would emphasize much more about mm-hmm. the multiracial democracy that may or may not be something that comes front and center in the DSA platform, and particularly about women of color. So, you know, I was a president of the local chapter of NOW, National Organization for Women, and making that an intersectional space was my charge. And I think we have to do it across the nation on whatever we do, because we have an original sin we're still grappling with, which is slavery. 400 years of affirmative action from a certain group of people has to be addressed. And that's what's causing a lot of barriers to other folks who are trying to get in.
Teresa, let me ask you, because you have worked with a lot of traditional Democrats, I would mm-hmm. say traditional for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about the Democratic Socialists of America running as Democrats?
So I would rather, because I do see the merge of what they've done in terms of merging their values and beliefs into the Democratic Party, because, well, the party's already strong. So for me, I would have, and I'm speaking for me personally, I would have rather them go into the independent party and build that up with those type of values. So for me, especially being a small business owner, you know, when we advocate for 15 an hour, I have to look at some of these things and the consequences behind that, right? Now, I believe, obviously, we need to raise the minimum wage, but we also need to think about the consequences of some of these policies. I think a lot of the socialists that we see now are millennials, and what those millennials are doing, they're just... they're not understanding what social policy actually looks like on the local or state level, or actually bringing back some of those ideas and using what we're branded to do is be innovative and be reactive to certain technologies and entrepreneurship. But for the party, I do see them grappling strongly towards the current party because we already have a groundswell. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure where that lands or if that movement is a movement or just a standstill.
Well, and just to follow up, sure. Are you saying, though, that when you talk about Medicare for all or mm-hmm. even free college for everybody, are you saying we can't afford that?
We're in a $1 trillion debt, you know, trillions with the S. And I'm not hearing solutions on what makes sense for our current economy right now. So it sounds good. Mm-hmm. It's a great talking point. But what are those solutions? Because honestly, I'm hearing consequences. I'm hearing high property taxes. You know, I'm hearing, you know, we're doing the working class, but what about the lower and the middle class? And what about those areas that are constantly being gentrified, right? And I if we go back to Elizabeth Fielder and the area that she ran in, it's being
South Philly,
South Philadelphia, and what's going on there? It's massive development, right? We have massive development. I'll stay right there.
Okay.
But we need to think about that.
Well, let me go back to you, Natalie, because there are questions, I guess, about, so then, you know, under our current system, how do you pay for that?
Yeah. So I'd say, for example, in the case of Medicare for All, you know, the thing that we can afford is to continue funding like a massive insurance bureaucracy that's squeezing working people, that's squeezing the American public, and that's squeezing our federal government, right? Because in many ways, you know, the Affordable Care Act was, you know, a federal subsidy to private insurance, right? If I should showed you right now, we have a fantastic little graph that we show people when we knock on doors about Medicare for All that shows the rising cost of health care and the rising CEO salaries, right? It's the same exact line, right? Most of what we spend when we pay each individual dollar for health care is either directly into the pockets of insurance company CEOs, or it's for the complicated bureaucracy of a multi-payer health insurance system where, you know, each doctor's office, each hospital has to pay a fleet of people who work in billing to navigate and process insurance claims. Right. We know that there isn't an economic question about how we fund Medicare for All. It is much more affordable than the current health insurance system that we have. It is about political will. Right. It's not an economic question.
Go ahead, Nina. Looks like you want to say something.
Yes, I actually was thinking about this middle layer that the insurance companies have inserted themselves. So I come from, the science background. I worked at Wills Eye Hospital, and I completely agree that we have a unnecessary layer between physicians and the patient. So which is why streamlining that, making that, we already have single payer. Medicare is single payer. We're doing that. The military has socialized medicine.
So it's not veterans.
So it is not that we don't do it in the country. It is about political will, as Natalie said. It is about people. But I really think it's about movement building.
Is it also about labels, though?
Yes, it is about labels, but it is about people understanding what is it that we're talking about. How will their lives be impacted when we have single payer? That is the bright line we need to be very clear about. So people who believe in that should have a very cogent explanation for people. And this is where I think, people who are low-wage workers working 2-3 jobs to just put food on their table, $15 an hour makes sense even for businesses because I think it drives the economy, because the money you give to $15, which is still just $30,000, that is a very low wage for a family of four, just let's be clear. But that money circulates much faster in the economy than when you give the 1% a tax break. That is, in fact, the data is showing it is not trickling back at all. Trickle-down economics does not work. We have shown that over and over again.
Let me get some callers and comments in on our conversation. That's Nina Ahmad, also with us Natalie Madiri and Teresa Lundy. And we are talking about some of the victories for Democratic Socialists in the last couple of months, the fact that they are, many of them, running as Democrats, and what it says about the Democratic Party and about the mood and the desires of voters as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Lots of comments. Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Rich from, looks like, Port Murray, New Jersey. Rich, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Marty. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, it seems to be my opinion that people are inherently afraid of change and things they're not familiar with. And I want to know, why isn't there a much more emphasis put on messaging regarding existing socialist programs within the United States? For instance, our military is huge. EPA, highways, post office, public schools, police departments, fire departments. None of these things are free, yet we don't recognize them as socialist programs.
Well, I guess one of the questions is whether those are all socialist programs, but what you're saying is that we pay a lot for our government and we get services in return. Do you want to take that, Teresa?
So I think to your question, that's probably a DSA question, because that they're responsible for the messaging on how that's supposed to actually be trickled down. But I agree. I think looking at some of the policies that's happening in terms of the firefighters, and but we're not really talking about the FOP or the Firefighter Association or the military, because that's something that we need. That is more so a protect and serve, I guess, from our government. So I don't know. I'll probably throw that back to Natalie.
Yeah, go ahead, Natalie.
Yeah, I actually think that was a really important distinction, right? Because there's a whole spectrum of social programs in this country, a whole spectrum of ways that we provide for the public. I think Democratic Socialists, you know, we emphasize, we love our postal workers, we love our public libraries, we love public education, right? We think these are sort of the core, you know, of provision for working class people. You know, but we do, our tax dollars do go to fund wars, right? Our tax dollars do go to police forces that are not accountable to our communities. You know, so those are the things, you know, that we would have more critique of, right? That, and it all goes back to our core belief that, right, we believe it's our dollars and our hard work that goes to fund these things, and that we should get a say over, you know, how they're run.
That's Natalie Madiri. She's a leader on the Democratic Socialist of America's National Political Committee. Nina Ahmad with us as well, former deputy mayor for Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney. She did run for lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania earlier this year. She did come in second. And Teresa Lundy is a principal of TML Communications, working with a number of local political people affiliated with the Democratic Party. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Nina, let me toss this to you, but a couple of months ago in Connor Lamb, mm-hmm. out in western Pennsylvania, a district that went for Donald Trump, beat his, it was a special election. This was Pennsylvania's 18th district, and he beat the Republican. That hadn't happened for a while. But if you look at where he stands on a lot of these issues, very moderate. He's many of the more restrictive gun laws that a lot mm-hmm. of people talk about. He supported the tariffs that came from the president, but it seemed like he fit that district really well. Mm-hmm. I don't know how well he would do in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. but what I think there's a danger of thinking, well, we're going to take all these DSA ideas and apply them across the country. I'm not sure that's going to work.
So that was done in a very short time.
It was.
That whole race. And I don't know that you really hear people's voices when you have such truncated campaigns, to really understand where people are. When you take away the labels and you talk about what is the content of these things, if you talk about content of healthcare, right, healthcare for all, that's a fundamental right that if you don't have that, you can't do any of the other things. So mm-hmm. it's how you message. And the person who called about messaging is completely correct, that messaging and having people understand and have access to that message and have a back and forth. It's not a one-way message. And I believe that fundamentally humans would like to have the ability to decide for themselves. And the ability comes when you're healthy. The ability comes when you're educated. Mm. The ability comes when you know where your dollar is going and when you have control over that dollar. That's what's fundamentally. And I think the Connor Lamb issue, I can guarantee you, give me 2 years and some resources to talk to people. The labels might not change, but people will understand what healthcare for all means.
Well, and I'm thinking also of Doug Jones in Alabama, who beat mm-hmm. Roy Moore. I mean, that was sort of a race unto itself. Mm. But I'm just curious what your thoughts are, Teresa, about how big a tent you think the Democratic Party can be.
As wide as it want to be. It literally has to just understand what those messaging points look like and really start to re-engage the community. So, you know, they've seen after the last primary election, the voter turnout was women. So now what are they doing? They are now putting resources. They are now finding organizations that support women, you know, Emily's List, you know, something locally like She Can Win. Mm-hmm. And they're really starting to impact elections, right, by gearing up for the next generation of women. I think I've seen this year alone about 6 leadership opportunities for women across the state, and I think it's again it's about time, but also I don't want them to just focus on the women. You know, just because you're a woman, you're assumed that everything's right and you're supposed to win. No, that's not what it should be. What it should be is about the character of the person, the policy, and overall what that person's vision is, if it's going to affect communities or affect change in the right direction.
Natalie, when I was looking at the voter turnout, and for primaries, they tend to be just
terrible,
just embarrassingly mm-hmm. low. But I wonder whether that has made some of these victories for DSA-endorsed candidates or even DSA candidates kind of skewed, because if you have 10 or 11 or 14% of people voting, What does that tell you? I mean, it tells us, I think, a lot of things.
Yeah, well, my sort of cynical response, and then I'll give, a kinder one. The cynical response is, what is the Democratic Party doing to boost voter turnout? And so I'll give you an example. You were just talking about Connor Lamb. I happen to think that the Democratic Party made a value judgment in that race about who mattered in that district. And they turned out the people who had been voting at the exclusion of people who maybe have been left out of politics for a while because the party wasn't speaking to them. In contrast, our candidate, Summer Lee, who ran out in North Braddock, which demographically is not north of
Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's demographically not much different than Connor Lamb's district. She was a Black radical socialist feminist who campaigned on Medicare for all, criminal justice reform, fully funded public schools, and she boosted voter turnout 53.7%, right? More people voted for her in her primary than voted in the previous election in total. Okay. I do think that, that we have to be strategic, right? For us, we want to pick the races where, a still small new organization can do really, really well. But I think that our politics have a huge reach. I think people are hungry for an anti-corporate politics.
Nina, do you think the Democratic Party is having a nervous breakdown in identity problem?
Well, the conventional Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. I'm not part of that. I am an independent Democrat sitting here telling you Summer Lee won because she spoke to people, right? I know, I've met Summer Lee. I think what I'm seeing here right now, right today,
sure.
I would charge that the Democratic Party in the city of Philadelphia is not doing its job. It is not.
It's kind of a one-party town.
It is not. Right now, I would be turning out crowds around this Kavanaugh nomination. I would have people in the streets talking about a treasonous president. Where is the party? I didn't get a phone call from anyone saying, I'm a Democrat. I'm a registered Democrat. Where's that phone call to me to say, hey, this is what we're doing. We're going to be on the streets. Sitting down or holding all this accountable. This is a transactional city where the backroom politics of so-and-so, so we'll get that, is what's been working. And it's clearly not working because we had 17% turnout in the Philadelphia region, right? That's abysmal. And that I put squarely at the feet of the current Democratic Party, because they are not exciting people, talking to people, particularly new voters who would love to be asked into the party to ask what their issues are. They're not doing that.
They're playing my song. Okay. We're up on a break here, and we are going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation with our guest talking about democratic socialism, Democratic Party. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Let me just quickly reintroduce our three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Nina Ahmad, former deputy mayor here in Philadelphia, ran for lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania earlier this year. Natalie Madiri is leader on the Democratic Socialists of America National Political Committee. And Teresa Lundy is a communications specialist here in the city of Philadelphia, principal of TML Communications, working with a lot of the Democrats in the city, and this is a very Democratic city. In fact, Teresa, how much do you think the fact that this town is a Democratic town is a problem for the Democratic Party?
It is, because even if we look at our statewide candidates who are running right now or who have run before, they are currently, the battleground is Philadelphia. Right. Because if we can push as many voters out in Philadelphia, it can change an election, or somebody can get elected. So I think, the cripple effect of it being, a strong Democratic town, it doesn't leave room for competition, right. Nor does it leave room for messaging to actually get across so people can effectively, consciously think about what they're voting for. I'm always a pragmatic solution type of person. That's my team. As we formulate some of these positions, you get some candidates that come to you, even before they get on the ballot, and just say, look, I got support of this person, and that person, you should be fine. We don't need any communications. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you not need communications, right? How do you plan to get out there to the voters beyond not even knocking on doors? What is your literature going to say about you? A lot of times when we see this literature, it went from, you know, the standard door hanger to now a 5x7 or now 3x5 card, right? So how much content are we putting out there so we get to know these persons but before they get a 4-year or 2-year term? We have to change that.
Let me read a couple of comments and we'll get some more callers in. An email from Linda. My prediction, if the DNC continues to push socialist ideas aside and Trump wins again, Trump will win in 2020. An email from Brennan. We cannot have justice in a society that is so economically stratified as ours is today. Economic policies of mainstream Democrats and Republicans over the last several decades have destroyed the middle class. It's time for change. A comment from Larry. Half of every tax dollar goes towards the military. We could pay for health care for all if we reallocated some of that money. So a flavor for some of the ideas out there. Let me get Josh from West Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Josh. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Marty. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I just have a general question about a topic that you were discussing earlier. What is the difference between single-payer and socialized medicine like the VA has? I'll take my answer up here.
Between single-payer and socialized medicine, Natalie, can I go back to you?
Sure, absolutely. So single-payer health care, you know, which is kind of synonymous with Medicare for All, is public financing of health care, right? So we're talking about raising the money that we use to pay for health care from, you know, from our tax dollars, from taxes on the wealthiest among us, you know, also potentially from our military spending budget. But it is not public delivery of healthcare, right? Okay. So we want to contrast that with in the UK, for example, right? If you are a doctor, you are a nurse, you are a public employee, you're employed by the state. So nothing about, you know, the employment status of our doctors, of our nurses would change. What would change is how we pay for healthcare, right? It's about, you know, are we going to pay for private insurance? Are we going to pay high premiums, high deductibles, and then you know, not be able to afford the additional fees at the point of service? Or are we going to have a rational system where we raise that money up front, we know what the costs are every year, and just cover everybody?
Nina, do you think we will get to a point where there will be an actual vote on single payer for all? We went through the Affordable Care Act, the battle over that. Now it's being, you know, slowly dismantled.
Right now in the state of Pennsylvania, there is a bill for single-payer healthcare. There's a Healthcare for All coalition that has worked very hard, and Pam DeLisio, amongst others, have put that forward. So I think it's, again, a political will, and doing that messaging so that people get behind it. Even Republicans who are opposing it, I would go to their voters, if I were the Democratic Party, and talk to their voters directly, bypass all these folks who are sitting in the State House and the State Senate. Talk to them and say, what is that bill about? Put the resources behind that bill. It'll pass. Mm. I feel very confident if people knew what they would be getting as opposed to what do they have, that bill would pass. And I'm hoping that we have a good coalition built that brings that message out.
Let me go back to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she had a really, really compelling video that I think was very important to her campaign. There was also another woman running, I think is just a regular Democrat, who also had a really good video about shutting doors and how she was able to, you know, open doors for herself and for other women. But let me just quote a couple of things that Ocasio-Cortez said in her video. She said, "It's time we acknowledge that not all Democrats are the same, that a Democrat who takes corporate money profits off foreclosure, doesn't live here, doesn't send his kids to school, doesn't drink our water, breathe our air, cannot possibly represent us. What the Bronx and Queens needs is Medicare for All, tuition-free public college education, a federal jobs guarantee, and criminal justice reform." Let me go to you, Teresa, as a communications person. How important is it having a really strong and compelling video?
Absolutely. It's 100%, 98%. The other two, you got to do the
work. The little hangers on the door.
Yeah, the other
still
two,
work,
you
got, right?
You got to do the work. So, but yeah, creating videos, and I do know the one you're mentioning, creating compelling videos and about that really takes your talking points and you condense it to, you know, 3 minutes or less, and really, well, probably a minute and a half, but and really start to talk to your base, because a lot of times we are visual right now. You know, Alexandra's, what, 28 years old?
Right.
We know that digital campaigns are the way to go. We know geotagging is the way to go. We know touch points and social media is the way to go. And so really, once you package all that up, you get the candidate that, you know, not only can we look at them and they're appealing, but what do they have to say? And so, and how is it being reached to me? Is it via email? Is it via phone? Is it, you know, via social media? But all the mediums are important and definitely worthwhile in every campaign.
How big is Democratic Socialists of America? How many members?
We are now an organization of 45,000 members. To put that into context, when I joined nearly 10 years ago, we were about 6,000.
Hmm. And how much is that due to Bernie Sanders and how much is that due to Donald Trump, do you think?
So we did grow quite a bit, you know, during and after the Bernie Sanders campaign. But our really huge growth was just after Donald Trump was elected. We call it the Trump bump. And then, you know, again, more recently, you know, in the week, actually in just like the 3 days after Alexandria's victory, you know, we grew by 5,000 members.
Hmm. Let me read some more comments. A tweet from Jordan: I'm a moderate Democrat, believe in the principles of the DSA. I want to get on board with this, but fear that this is leading to a polarization within the Democratic National Committee and causing us to lose nationally due to lack of strategy. Can you speak to this?
Yeah.
Just quickly, and then, Nina, I want you to weigh in on that as well.
Yeah, I actually, I think that that commenter was correct. I think a lot of what has happened with Bernie Sanders at the past DNC, what's happening with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's victory, and what I hope continues to happen is that socialist politics in the mainstream, that we are making an intervention that exposes the contradictions in the Democratic Party, right? Because on the one hand, it is true, right, that the Democratic Party upholds and has some commitments to a lot of social values that are much better and are incredibly important when you compare them to the Republican Party. But it is still a party of capital, right? In the socialist movement and the labor movement, we have a saying, the bosses have two parties. We need a party of our own for workers. You know, and I think that at this moment, when we are still small, when we are still new, and we're sort of testing out to see if our strategy and our analysis of this political moment is right, a lot of our work is about exposing those contradictions for people, having them played out, having people understand our, you know, our politics. You know, a moment when we were speaking about Alexandria's video, I think even more than the medium itself, why that video was so critical for her campaign was because she put forward a vision of oppositional working class politics that framed for people that this is about the many of us versus the few. You know, and that's what we're doing. You know, whether it's in the DNC now with our candidates here in Pennsylvania, across the country, we are trying to expose those contradictions.
Do you see those contradictions?
I do. And I think the Democratic Party is responding. We just had the superdelegate change.
Yes, that was yesterday,
and
right?
That, yeah. And I'm like, okay, they're listening. I think they just have to, again, message that better, that we are listening. There's nothing wrong in making change. There's nothing wrong mm-hmm. in saying, this is a good thing. Let's adopt this. This is, and I think having a Democratic Party that is flexible and understanding the times and moving with the electorate is important. And they need to reflect that. And I think they're starting to. But then we have the Joseph Crowleys who are still trying to undermine Alexandria by, I don't know why he was endorsed by the Working Party's Working Families Party. That to me is, I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's still there to me is really strange after he said that he was going to support Alexandria. He needs to just sit down and let this young woman get to her rightful place.
But Teresa, are you saying that when looking at the two mainstream parties, that there really is no difference? And I'm thinking about the 2016 race, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, that there really is no or was no difference between those two candidates for voters?
Could you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm taking us back to 2016, yeah. And a lot of people were on the fence, frankly, about Hillary Clinton, whether yeah. they wanted to vote for her or not. And perhaps this is with the advantage of hindsight looking yeah. back. But from a socialist perspective,
Are those, so Tweedledum and Tweedledee, are those two candidates who represented the two mainstream parties, are they interchangeable or were they interchangeable?
They are not interchangeable. I think that they're on a spectrum. I think that we clearly would not be seeing, the separation of children from their immigrant parents on the border if Donald Trump wasn't, leading our country right now. But that being said, before Donald Trump, we still had a tax on labor unions, right? Before Janice, there was Friedrichs. We still had, a crisis of public education. We still had many Democrats, moving to privatize our public schools. To say that the status quo under the Democratic Party was fine and that there wasn't any problems, I think is what it's part of what has given the opening for the rise of the far right. I think that they have successfully argued that a lot of the problems in our country right now are, because some other, whether it's immigrants, whether it is people of country in this people of color in this country, whether it is poor Americans, are the parasites who are taking from them. When in fact, as socialists, we are able to point the finger at the real parasites, the capitalists, in a way that the Democratic Party is not right now.
Let me turn back to you, Teresa, and this is a tweet from Margot. Love this discussion. What we need is capitalism heavily tempered by socialism, not just socialism. We need creative and innovative entrepreneurs. They're an important part of what makes this country great as much as an educated workforce. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I agree 100% with Margot because, entrepreneurship is the backbone. It's actually in every talking point in terms of small business and any candidate want to run and, of course, the president's agenda. But I do believe, as we talk about what a business is and what it takes to run a business, the way it works, a business person calculates the cost of providing a service or creating a product, including the manpower of staff, and comes up with a price that pays the overheads and generates a profit. So, if staff costs rise and prices rise, which is called inflation, it's a prime example of how we have to think through the consequences of any policy before advocating for it. So I think we just need to be a little bit more responsible, but also very aware of what entrepreneurship looks like in this country and start looking at what it looks like locally.
Now, I almost hate to raise the next presidential election, but I feel in context of our conversation here, when you look at someone like Elizabeth Warren, and there are other people that are making noises about possibly running in what would be 2020. Mm-hmm. Who speaks to you?
So I think we have to get away from personalities. We have to look at what they're talking about. This is a country that is driven by how you look and whatever.
But we know what Elizabeth Warren talks about. She talks a lot about it.
Exactly. But I'm saying that I think we have to look at their issues. I would love to see someone with a very intersectional platform. I have yet to see that, even from Elizabeth Warren. And I think that is what we need to be front and center, talking about people who've been left out and continue to be left out, even in progressive politics. And that is who I think needs to be included, and that would be the candidate for me. I have yet to see a very comprehensive platform that looks at, as I said earlier, the original sin and what role does that play in our economy? In our economy, about creating barriers. We have not fundamentally struck down those barriers, and that's who would speak to me.
How about for you? We're almost out of time here, Natalie, but is there someone probably I didn't mention?
I think that Bernie's going to run again, and I'm going to be for Bernie. I think he actually had an incredibly comprehensive intersectional platform, particularly around police reform, criminal justice reform.
It took him a while, though, wouldn't you say?
It took him a while, but moreover, I think that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had a fantastic platform, I think was an all-around powerhouse, intersectional platform. I think that she has set the golden mark for Bernie, and I think that he's listening, and I'm extremely excited to watch them campaign together in the next election.
So Bernie 2020.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Teresa Lundy, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And she's the principal of TML Communications here in Philadelphia. Natalie Medeiri is a leader on the Democratic Socialists of America's National Political Committee, and she was co-chair of the Philadelphia chapter of DSA. And Natalie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
And rounding out our trio of guests, Nina Ahmad, former deputy mayor here in Philadelphia for Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney, and she ran for lieutenant governor in 2018, just a couple of months ago. Go to WHY. Thank you very much. Sorry about that. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us. Thank you.